Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? To be exiles?
This is the Doctor speaking. Well, one of them. Is there anybody there?
I hate computers and refuse to be bullied by them.
Their leader was called?
The Doctor.
Are you trying to tell us that you are the Doctor?
That's right. I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow so the TARDIS would be free of the force field.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say. Would you like a jelly, baby?
I'm a Time Lord.
I'm the Doctor. Or will be if this regeneration works out. And it seems not a moment too soon.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
I am the Doctor!
I'm the Doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life!
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor.
I'm Aldi.
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Both eyes are cool.
It's a fez. I wear a fez now. Fezzes are cool.
Silence will fall.
Dilly Gaff, everyone, and welcome back to another TARDIS Blend. It's been a while. My name is Greg Davies, also known as CGT2099.
And I'm Tom Cheridar.
And Tom, we missed you last episode. We did a special last time with the commentary we did for The Doctor's Wife. And you said,
I know, I listened to it. It was great.
Yeah, we had a good time. Actually, you know what? People out there listening to TARDIS Blend, if you haven't had a chance to check that out yet, or even if you have... go ahead and let us know in the comments, you know, what you thought about it. And, I mean, if we get enough comments, we'll probably do another one of the commentary things. You know, maybe let us know what you'd like to hear us do a commentary on. Maybe one of the lesser favorite episodes or you know, whatever. Whatever your preference is, just let us know what your thoughts are on the commentary track that we did. We had a lot of fun doing it. We had... Jay Fowler, Andy Sorsini, and Anthony Ha in the studio with us to record, and it was a hell of a blast. We had a great time, and it was certainly a completely different podcasting experience from what I've ever had with anything else I've ever done in podcast, Tom. So I'd really like to do another one, but that's not why we're here. We are here because we are reviewing the latest episode of Doctor Who, being the Christmas special airing the December 25th in both the UK and the USA, entitled The Doctor, the Widow, and the Wardrobe, a play on the Narnia series. And Tom, initial thoughts, rated out of 10.
For an episode, I'll give it an 8. For a Christmas special, I'll give it a 9 out of 10.
Wow. You know what? I gave it an 11 out of 10.
Oh, yeah?
Because it was better than A Christmas Carol, and I gave that a 10 last year. So
yeah, I gave that a 10.
Yeah. So, oh, you liked the last one better?
I did like it better, but I that being said, I just had really high hopes, which were not going to be met. But I really did. I enjoyed this one. I liked it.
Well, that's basically, for people who haven't seen it yet, the stories involved where the Doctor is helped by a kind woman called Madge. Around 1938, he promises to repay the kindness. Later on, her husband joins the war effort and is involved in some mishap in a plane in 1941, and he's presumed dead. The Doctor arrives at their holiday home, taking the place of the caretaker, and promises to make their Christmas the best ever for Madge and her kids. Using the TARDIS he creates, I thought this was really cool, use of the TARDIS too, by the way, Tom. He used the TARDIS to create a dimensional portal to another planet. Future, which was basically the planet of the Christmas trees. And it turns out the forest is set to be harvested by a human corporation using some kind of acid rain technique. And the Doctor's stuck in the middle of it all. He needs to save Madge. He needs to save the kids. And he needs to save the forest all in one bang. And so that's like a very brief synopsis of what the story is all about. But as always... you know, we will talk about the content of the story in a bit, but we jump pretty much straight into the spoilers. And so if you haven't seen it yet, you know, pause the podcast, go back and see it, and come back and listen to us. The main spoiler for this episode, Tom, which was totally unexpected by a majority of Who fans, including myself, was the surprise appearance of Amy and Rory at the end of the episode.
Yeah, I was not expecting that.
Totally
not on the ticket.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was really nice. And I think, funnily, the way Moffat tied it in, he tied it into the story. Because and this is my most favorite part about the episode. Like, every time the Doctor gets together with a companion of some kind, whether it be, you know, a companion for an episode like a Christmas special, or companions for an entire season, we usually follow the character development of the companion, and usually it's a learning experience that belongs to them that makes them a better person by being with the Doctor, right?
Yeah.
This time, he made the learning experience belong to the Doctor, and you see that when it happens at the end when he reunites with Amy and Rory for Christmas. And for the first time ever, he cries in happiness. You know, I thought that
was...
Too
many women he sang.
Yeah, you know, it was just really, really nice.
I like that line.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Pond! Guess who's coming for dinner?
Ooh. Not dead, then.
We've done that. Oh. We're about to have Christmas dinner. Joining us?
If it's no trouble.
There's a place set for you.
But you didn't know I was coming. Why would you set me a place?
Oh, because we always do. It's Christmas, you moron.
So yeah, that was really cool, very very cool stuff. The other thing I dig was the fact that the planet that they were on was Androzani Major, and this is a continuity reference here. Androzani is a system of two planets, twin planets, one of which we saw in this episode. The other one we saw in the last Peter Davison episode, The Caves of Androzani, which is like a desert cave-like planet. So if you haven't seen that one yet, you probably want to check that out because it connects to this episode. There was a reference to Chris Eccleston.
Yeah, I did catch that one, that he met a tree woman once who fancied him. Yeah. I like that.
It was like the whole forest fancied me. That was really, really cool. So I like those little connections that they throw in there every now and again. That was pretty cool. Any other thoughts you had, Tom, about the good points of the episode?
I really like that they were consistent and fun with it. They really kind of did jerk you around a little bit towards the, is it going to be a sad story? Is it going to be a happy story? But the entire time, you loved Midge. Or Madge.
Madge, yeah. Oh, yeah, she was great.
You loved her, and when she was angry, you loved her even more. I love that she pulled a gun on those people. That part made me laugh.
Oh, yeah.
When she was crying, and the... now, who played the head security chief?
That was Bill Bailey. He's one of my favorite English comedians and actors.
I was like, I've seen him before, he's funny. But, I mean, that part made me laugh. Like, I thought that was hilarious.
Now, I love Bill Bailey to death. I really do. But there was not enough of him in this episode.
No, hope he shows back up again.
Yeah, I think he was terribly, terribly wasted. In this episode, and I hope Moffat takes note, because a lot of fans are saying the same thing that I did about that he was incredibly wasted on the show. He could have been...
Well, and we don't know why. He might have been like, hey, do you have 2 minutes? Do you have 5 minutes?
Yeah, it kind
of... Want to jump in here and take this part?
It was mainly a glorified cameo appearance.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, that's all it was. I mean, and honestly, like, I would be interested to see how many takes they did, if they even did more than one, and if he was originally scheduled to be put in there.
Oh yeah, no, he was scheduled to be cast in there, he was advertised by the BBC as being like one of the main actors in the show, and so
lame.
So there were a lot of fans, and you know, including myself, that were somewhat disappointed about that, simply because we had been waiting for seeing Bill Bailey in a Doctor Who, because if anyone out there has seen the Stephen Fry television show QI, on which Bill Bailey regularly appears, it's quite well known that he is a massive Doctor Who fan. He's a big geek anyway, but, you know, he's a massive Doctor Who fan. And he was on the episode of QI that David Tennant guest starred on when he was still playing Doctor Who. And the most famous line, you know, he said to David Tennant, he's like, "These guys are acting like this whole thing's all fiction, Doctor. What? The show you're on's a documentary, isn't it?" You know, yes. So, you know, he's that kind of guy.
It is, in fact, a big bicycle, and it was called a giraffe bicycle. It was its official name, and a little badge on it saying the giraffe bicycle, and it had a specific function. But you may know that all bicycles at the beginning were very big. I mean, there it is. There is the giraffe bicycle. And there is its badge.
It's lethal. What happens when you get to the traffic lights? Oh, there weren't traffic lights.
No, of course. Delivering papers to a giant mailbox.
You're thinking, and that's good.
Okay, thank you.
For lighting lamps.
Yes, David Tennant, more points.
Thank you.
This is all the time travel he does. He knows something about every era.
Yeah.
He's acting.
It's not real. What do you mean?
Don't listen to
what do you mean?
I'm sorry. Have I upset you?
Don't tell me. Don't listen. It's real.
Don't
it's
listen
real.
To the bad man. Don't listen to the bad man.
I know. It's a documentary. I know.
Yes, exactly.
Cybermen are real. Saw one in the corridor upstairs looking for him. Yeah. Tennant.
I even sent a tweet to Stephen Moffat going, "We need more Bill Bailey."
Yeah, I don't think anybody would disagree.
So,
yeah, that's pretty much what it is, and I liked it a lot. It was a feel good show. Like, I like that these specials are consistently feel good. I felt like with some of the David Tennant ones, it was just more action. It was just action.
Well, and when you think about it, like the David Tennant Christmas specials were, in reality, they were a Doctor Who story that just so happened to coincide and was set on Christmas Day. Whereas what Stephen Moffat's trying to do is he's really amping up the whole Christmas theme.
Yeah, and it works.
Yeah, it does.
It's rare that you can get it to work consecutively. So.
Well, you know, and the other thing is, like, it's not an overbearing Christmassy feel, you know, where a lot of those specials are. It's all about the Christmas spirit, and not really. It's just he just amplifies the Christmas aspect to make it a part of the plot.
Add some details. It's always on Christmas. I like that part. I also like the fact that you know, it's about it, but he just kind of lets the imagery speak for itself. You know, like the Christmas trees that grow with ornaments on them.
That was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like little things like that. Like, that's awesome. I think not only is it like Doctor Who-ish, but that's like Dr. Seuss and Tim Burton-ish, and just shit that's out there and just wonderful. And I like his explanation of that. Of course this is happening. If something happens everywhere at least once. You can call it a coincidence or...
Now, I like the kids that were in this too. Like, little Cyril was pretty good. I thought, you know, for a young chap, he was pretty good. His sister, whose name eludes me at the moment, I believe is actually 19 years old, which she doesn't even look that old in this in this episode. So, you know, they were both very good, I thought, the two kids.
Yeah.
You know, because usually it's kind of, with kids, it's kind of touch and go in some ways because... You know, you can get a kid like in the Night Terrors episode from last season where you could kind of tell, like, that little kid did not really have very much experience on a soundstage or anything.
He was – but he's probably also really young.
Yeah.
Legitimately young versus, you know, playing a young character.
Yeah. So, I didn't really have any criticisms aside from the Bill Bailey thing, but that's like a fanboy whine. More than anything else.
I think that's fair.
Well, it's a fanboy whine. It really is. I mean, you know, just throwing more Bill Bailey in for the sake of more Bill Bailey doesn't really serve the story. So
maybe it would.
Well, you know, maybe if he comes back into the series. I would love to see, incidentally mentioning this, I would love to see the Doctor return to one of the Androzani planets anyway. in one of the next seasons. So I think it would be a lot of fun to go back there, and maybe he could cross paths with Bill Bailey again. And those costumes that Bill Bailey and his soldiers had were pretty damn awesome, I thought.
Yeah.
So very Stormtrooper-esque, or a little Halo-esque as well, when they first came out of that Walker.
I was thinking more Halo.
Yeah. So, but anyway. Well, briefly touching on the brief references to the overarching plot of Doctor Who, obviously in this episode the Doctor is reunited with Amy and Rory, apparently 2 years in their timeline after his stage death. Presuming after their Christmas celebrations, I'm presuming that they go off in adventures again, because we're told that this upcoming season they're going to be back, and that this season will be their final one as companions for a... you know, for the Doctor, and that it will be a transition for the Doctor to meeting a new companion. Which means, I'm guessing, Tom, that from what we've been told, that this will be the first time in modern Doctor Who that we haven't actually started the season with a new companion. The new companion's coming later. Which was common in classic Doctor Who. And what was also common in classic Doctor Who was that there was like a little overarching between the companions. So like, you know, for example, Adric joined Tom Baker, and then someone else joined Tom Baker, and then someone else did, and then he had the three companions that were with him. And so it was like a transitional thing for them. So I'm wondering whether Moffat's going to kind of follow that route to do something a little different, but I guess we'll wait and see.
I would like to see some change it up at this point. Something out of – and he's good at that. He's good at throwing you off to where you don't know what you're going to see. And I think that the reason why he's announcing things, he's very masterful in the way that he does this. He tells you the stuff before the season begins, before anything starts. You've got time to percolate your attention. He doesn't talk about, you know, who's booking who for what or when. And I think that generates a lot of interest and adds to the story.
He does indeed. And I want to share something with you that I was reading. It's a recent quote by Stephen Moffat, and they've got it at the top of the Series 7 page, the TARDIS wiki. And he says, this is his attempt to clarify what's happening with Series 7. He says, okay, here it is, the best answer you can have. I don't know. If I did know, I wouldn't tell you. When I do know, what I know will change, so I won't really know then either. And then it will change again, so I still won't really know. And secretly, if I'd known all along, I'd still be telling you that I don't know, because everything I said I knew could be wrong, so I'd never really have known in the first place.
I like that.
So, Stephen Moffat's like his real life dialogue is very much like the Doctor's. He's, and I think he speaks through the Doctor sometimes, like in his writing. Like, I was rewatching a couple of episodes recently, and one of them that stood out was when the Tesselecta showed up in the series. The Doctor's line was, you know, miniaturized humans in a robot body. I didn't see that coming.
Don't you touch her! Do not harm her in any way!
Why would you care? She's the woman who kills you.
I'm not dead.
You're dying.
Well, at least I'm not a time-traveling, shape-shifting robot operated by miniaturized cross people, which I have got to admit I didn't see coming.
I think that was Moffat saying, I really didn't see, like a robot with miniature people in it coming to be the thing that would save the Doctor from death.
You
know what I'm saying?
Like, so, he's just like, oh, yeah, we can use this.
Yeah.
Why not?
And I think, you know, when you rewatch Doctor Who, there's some lines that he puts in there that I think are quite deliberate, and he's really talking to the audience through the character of the Doctor. It just seems like his kind of style to do that. So, I caught some other references too, rewatching some episodes. Like the last line of Series 6 was Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Right? The first line of Series 6 was, where is the Doctor? And the girl says, Doctor Who. So it like he's got these the question of Doctor Who acting as parentheses for the entire season. I really like that. And, you know, just little touches like that, you know, just for me, just highlight the how much of a master craftsman he is with his writing. He really puts a lot of thought into it. And instead of, like, fully pushing Doctor Who all the way into the realm of fairy tales, which he damn nearly did with Series 5, he kind of reins it in a little bit. Like, he pushes a little bit away from the sci-fi thing, more into the fairy tale thing, but reins it in a bit so that it still remains its own thing, if you get what I mean. Like, almost its own genre in a lot of ways. So
yeah, and then, you know, just because we're talking about this and you were saying he's got dialogue that sounds a lot like the Doctor's, I'm sitting there thinking, there's not very many people who you could write dialogue like that and then have them carry it out and still have the flow of conversation. And we saw that Mr. Seven can pull it off quite masterfully. We know that Matt Smith can do it, but I'm sitting here thinking there's not really that many people, and when they like test characters, they must get them to read an awful lot of dialogue very fast and very quick to see if they can keep up. As you know, I will say the character on Sherlock does the same thing.
Well, yes, but that's because the Sherlock and the Doctor are essentially the same character. In many ways, you know, they're like if you cut it all down to the same formula, like and go back to even classic Doctor Who, you know, originally the first two Doctors were kind of like these eccentric guys from outer space discovering the future and history, and taking dragon companions along with them. But by the time John Pertwee came along, Terence Dix and Barry Letts really reinvented the character to be more Sherlock Holmes-esque, with a lot of deduction and a lot of scientific knowledge and yada, yada, yada. And so, you know, that has somewhat been retained all these years. And so the frantic, manic way in which they're voicing stuff is very much the same kind of character. Because you think about it, like, the Doctor is like, his head's full of all this stuff, and his body can hardly keep up with it, and his mouth can hardly keep up with it. And it's the same with Sherlock. Like, he's a million miles ahead of everyone else that's in the room.
I can see that.
You know, do you know what I'm saying? Like, they verbalize it. So essentially, it's the same character. And I think that's why there's a lot of the fanboy and fangirl love that's out there that you mostly see on Tumblr more than anywhere else, where you see a lot of fans going, God, I wish Moffat would cross over the two. Which I hope he never does personally, but
no, I don't want them to do that either.
But you can see why they feel that way.
Yeah,
because they essentially are the same character.
And it would screw the illusion of both, because then you'd be like, oh, this is just a manufactured copy.
Exactly,
they work so well in their own universes, exactly. And I don't want to ever see them together.
So when you look at it, Sherlock is the Doctor, Watson is the companion, and Moriarty is the Master.
Yeah.
So that's essentially where the character template comes from, but they're their own unique thing, and they stand alone. So, but speaking of Sherlock, Tom, we really should let our listeners know out there that Stephen Moffat's series or mini series, if you want to call it mini series, because it's not really a series, because it's like three episodes per season or something like that.
Yeah, it's three or four. Yeah, I think it's three.
But anyway, Sherlock returns next week, actually, the 1st of January in the UK. I can't say for sure, US fans, when it's going to be airing in the United States, because I haven't looked into it just yet. But I do know that the UK airing begins on the 1st of January, and there'll be a two-week break in between each episode. There's three episodes to this series, just like there was with the previous one, and so I think each episode is about an hour, I guess.
Yeah.
So
no, they're 90 minutes.
Oh, they're full features, are they? That's great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, check it out if you're interested in Sherlock, and if you haven't checked it out yet and you want to see more about it, the US fans, you'll be happy to know that it is streaming on Netflix as well, the first season. So you can check out the first season if you haven't seen any of that yet. And I mean, what the hell? It's like three movie length episodes. Check it out.
Yeah, they're really good. Yeah. It's really solid watching. You won't get bored, I promise.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. So yeah, definitely worth checking out. But back on Doctor Who for a second, let's look at what's coming forward for Doctor Who. Well, the BBC has still yet to come out with an official announcement about what's coming up with Series 7. As you heard the quote from Stephen Moffat earlier, even he doesn't really know, and if he did, he wouldn't say anyway. But at the moment, based upon what we have heard from people around the world, that it looks like Series 7 will be going ahead in 2012, but it will be starting much later in the year. With a break near Christmas time, this season will be broken in half like the last season was, but the break will happen over the Christmas break, and we will have a Christmas special that will tie the two halves together. And then the second half will be airing in the beginning of 2013. And then we presume that Series 8 will continue straight after Series 7 for the celebration of the 50th anniversary. And so that's where we're at the moment. That's what it looks like is going to happen right now. But, of course, these things are subject to change because they're all based upon hearsay and rumors. One of the things that I did pick up in the news lately, though, Tom, is that there is a rumor going around that there's a chance that Doctor Who may be shooting on location in Australia.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah, it hasn't been confirmed yet, but there's a rumor going around that they're looking at filming in mid to late 2012 in Australia for some Aussie-based stories, two or three episodes, which means that it probably won't be part of the first half of Series 7. It'll most likely either be for Series 8 or for the second half of Series 7, which would be a lot of fun. Personally, I'd love to see the Doctor go into the 60s of Australia and explain what happened to Harold Holt, the Prime Minister that went missing.
Completely lost me there.
Well, the Prime Minister, Harold Holt, just went for a swim in the ocean one day and just disappeared.
Huh.
No one knows. His body was never found. No one ever knew what happened to him. And I would love to see a Doctor Who story that explains, like, he gets swept off to an alien planet or turned into a fish or something like that. So, I mean, I don't know. It'd be cool if they did something along those lines, like teeing in on gravitating on one of the cultural mysteries of Australia. That would be a lot of fun. So, well, hopefully that comes around because, quite frankly, Tom, it's about time because Doctor Who is as much a cultural thing in Australia as what it is in the UK because all us Aussies grew up with it as well. So, you know, would like to see that happen indeed. The other thing I wanted to mention based on this episode that we just watched is I really love the idea of sibling companions. It's never been done before until...
Yeah, but I think there's a reason because that would be stupid.
Well, people before Series 5 would have thought a married couple in the TARDIS would have been retarded. And look how that turned out.
It started out that way.
Well, it evolved into that, and I'm sure it was pre-planned by Moffat because the way integrated into River Story.
If you told people it was a married couple, they would have been like, fuck this.
Yeah. So I think that would be interesting. I'm not saying it should happen. I just think it would be a different thing altogether. And the other thing that's been jumping around the news lately, and we talked about this on a recent episode of Social Blend. You and I did, Tonk. You were on Social Blend with me, and we had Chris Gore from Attack of the Show on that episode, which was a lot of fun to record. And we were talking a little bit about Doctor Who and the rumor, well, not really a rumor, but Helen Mirren actually came out and said recently that she would really, 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 really like to be Doctor Who one day.
I can see that happening.
And I would like to see that happen too. I think she would be a brilliant Doctor Who. And of course, the question, you know...
Would she commit to a full 12 or 13 episodes, though, is the question.
That's correct, yeah.
Because if she would, then I'm down. But if she's only going to come in for, like, a special, and that's that, then no, I'm not. I want a full season commitment or longer.
Mm-hmm. Well, the question that it boiled down to on our episode of Social Blend was, you know, do you think that would be a problem, like with the Doctor, who's traditionally been a male character, all of a sudden turning into a female character? And, you know, the consensus that I generally felt that we came to on the show was like, it wouldn't really matter. What really would matter is that, you know, whoever they chose male or female, regardless of race, age, or anything, that they chose the character who was best, who would best serve the story, and who would portray the Doctor the best. You know, that's just...
if it's not going to be any good, we don't want to see it. It doesn't matter who it is.
Right, it's like nobody wants to see Doctor Who starring Harrison Ford as the Doctor.
Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Reviled at conventions and only come out when your buddy Jon Favreau coaxes you into doing a panel.
Oh, dear.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, dear. Anyway, so that's all I've really got written down here in my notes that I wanted to have a chat about for this episode. Tom, was there anything else you wanted to bring up?
No, that's pretty much it, man.
Well, I got obviously I've got a classic Doctor Who recommendation for everyone, and the most obvious one that is related to this episode in particular is the Peter Davison swan song called "The Caves of Androzani." And you know, out of all the classic Doctor Who episodes, it really is one of the best. I think it's Peter Davison's finest performance as the Doctor. There's some really, really good, solid storytelling from Robert Holmes there. You know, I think a lot of people who aren't necessarily too into classic Doctor Who and more into the modern Doctor Who would probably find it to be one of the most enjoyable picks from classic Doctor Who, you know, along with some of the other classics that we've mentioned, like Genesis of the Daleks. But The Caves of Androzani, right, way up there, dude. It's definitely one of my favorites of all time. And, you know, it connects to this episode too, vaguely, but it does. So check it out.
Your sense of humor will be the death of you, Doctor. Probably quite soon.
You're dying.
It's called spectroxtoxemia. There's no cure.
Your luck's run out right now.
You think bullets can stop me now?
I'm not gonna let you stop me now!
I'm sorry, Perry. I can't make it. Is this death? Is this death?
And of course, you know, we can always point people who aren't too interested in classic Doctor Who, will point them to the, I believe it was the second episode of Series 1, where the Forest of Cheam reference comes from.
Was it the second? Yeah, I think it was the second. Because the first one was the Plastic Men. The second one was, or I don't even know if they were Plastic Men.
Called the End of the World?
Yeah, it's, and yeah, because he takes Rose to see the...
Literally, the end of the world.
yeah, like Earth basically dying. And they, you have to be very wealthy to come up and basically get a front seat to watch that, so... And there's a plant woman, and she's totally into Christopher Eccleston.
Absolutely, you know, and he's totally into her too, but maybe not in that way. But he's just—I
think he was kind of into it. I think he was entertaining it.
You can never really tell with the Doctor, you know. You just never tell.
Yeah, man. I wonder if we'll ever get him back.
I don't know. He has said that he hasn't really got any interest in the 50th anniversary, and which I kind of find a bit sad. But at the same time, like, I'm down with what Moffat has said, you know, countless times, you know, and that is, we're not going to bring back old Doctors just for the sake of bringing old Doctors back. You know, if we have a really, really, really good story and it works, then sure. But, you know, and I'm down with that because... That was probably the criticism of the three Doctors and the five Doctors back in the day, that you know, it was just the nostalgia and the hype of getting all the Doctors together in one room. You know,
he says that, and watch him pull the wool out from under us and just do it anyway. Because he actually has a good idea.
You know what? I would love to see Paul McGann come back. Even if Chris Eccleston doesn't, I would love to see the Eighth Doctor come back. Because he really got a raw deal. He only got the one episode.
Yeah, and honestly, like, I think that... I think we could get number 7. I think we could get number 8. And I think we...
I don't know about Sylvester McCoy. I'm not sure. He's getting a bit on in age. I don't know.
But he would do it. Who cares?
Oh, yeah, absolutely he would do it. He would love to do it. He's just, you know, he's a really good actor. He's a class actor, and he...
I think that they would do it. I would love to see an episode where he crosses over. He looks, you know, I'll tell you this. He does look a little bit old, but so did Peter Davidson when he came in and did that thing with the
Well, that was kind of explained in that mini episode.
I don't care, but I mean, the point being, I don't care. I would look the other way. The only one I think would be tough is a Tom Baker, because he does look really old. He looks so old that you couldn't really look the other way.
I've said this before. I said the only way that you would ever be able to pull off a Tom Baker appearance in modern Doctor Who would be if...
Cameo.
You had... Well, if you had the Doctor travel back to that one episode in classic Doctor Who where he ages like a million years and he comes out of that machine and he's like all old and frail and he's got this long old man beard and stuff like that.
I feel like they would be able to do it without having a ridiculous explanation that delved back into the history that you would have to go back and explain it. Like, I think they could do it without having to do that.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
If they were going to do it.
I don't know. I can't see Tom Baker doing it, and I can't see Sylvester McCoy doing it.
I can.
Definitely can't see Colin Baker doing it, because, boy, that guy's... His gauge has not been kind to that man. But, you know, he... But I will say this about Colin Baker. He is extraordinarily cool. I'm watching the Colin Baker Doctor Who's at the moment, and the documentaries and features and the commentary tracks on there, he is... He's very cool, and he's really open about the fact that he was highly resistant to the Technicolor costume that he was forced to wear by John Nathan Turner, and he was more interested in being a doctor that just wore a plain black suit.
Yeah,
which I found really interesting as well. But you know, but I think it would be a lot of fun if they at least brought back Tennant and Eccleston
See, now here's why I think that they would bring back Eccleston, Colin Baker, and Paul McGann. It's because that's just a limited time. Now, Colin Baker didn't, but they put him on the show because, like, if you hear him explain it, the BBC really wanted to cancel Doctor Who, but they couldn't. So they basically put their thumb on it and gave him all kinds of restrictions and really stomped them the hell out. To the point of which they kind of just took advantage of it, put a little bit of a political injuncture into it, and you know, did the best they could.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really feel like those guys would be a welcome return because they're not there. But I feel like Christopher Eccleston, if he does do a return, he's not going to be with any other doctors because I feel like he considers himself far above all of the other doctors. I do.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I could just imagine a scene of him and David Tennant arguing, you know.
No. I don't think that he as a person would do it. I don't think he would come back to do it, which is sad, but, you know, it is what it is.
Well, we'll wait and see. We'll see if it pans out. I'd very much like to see it. At the very least, I'd like to see Paul McGann come back. I mean...
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't yet.
Well, yeah, it's people have been... There's a group of fans out there that have been screaming for it for a long time, although there's another group of fans that prefer to think that the Doctor Who movie never existed, but, you know...
I mean, okay, I'll say this. I like the man. I don't like the movie. I thought the movie was bad.
Well, it's not the finest example of Doctor Who storytelling, I will admit that, but no, I enjoy it.
I would like to give him a better example with people who actually give a damn about the story and aren't trying to fit it into a TV movie in an American setting. I think that he's owed at least that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I agree. I absolutely agree. Well, we'll close out on that note as we speculate on what's going up for the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who, but we still have a whole year to wait before that happens. Coming up for the TARDIS blend, well, we'll probably have another episode over the next couple of months at some stage where we'll either, you know, do a show where we catch up on some of the Doctor Who related news, or if you guys really want us to, we'll do another commentary episode. We had a lot of fun doing it, and... you know, I'm sure Tom would like to jump in and have a one too, because he wasn't here for the last one, unfortunately. But, you know, if you guys dug it, then let us know in the comments. Let us know what you think. And, you know, if you did like it, let us know what episode you'd like us to tackle next. Because, you know, we'd like to do another one. And, we really want to do it if there's interest out there. So, you know, if there's not much interest out there, then, you know, we'll just soldier on with TARDIS
Limited. Yeah, if you guys don't like it, then I had nothing to do with it. And
yeah, it was...
I shit all over it, obviously.
Tom can blame me for that, so... All right, well, I'm jumping off here, and we're going to go back and rewatch The Doctor, the Widow, and The Wardrobe, because it was a hell of a lot of fun, and, you know, what the hell, it's the Christmas special for Doctor Who. How awesome is that? We'll catch you next time for another TARDIS Blend, people. Tom, as a pleasure, been a pleasure as always, my friend.
You too. Thanks for watching us, or listening, rather.
And we'll catch you next time. Here we go.